Did you guys get along to the keynote? Yeah? Having fun Ignite so far? Yeah, cool. We might steer clear of translator demos during the ASP.NET Core talk. I'm pretty lucky the goo didn't demo everything I was going to do today, so we're doing all right. Who's using any ASP.NET Core stuff yet? Dabbling? Yeah? What sort of stuff are you doing?
Just dabbling?
All right. What's that, like downloading Visual Studio and then looking at it, or?
On the Mac.
Oh, on the Mac, all right. Yep, good day. Old one up here, mine's got stickers on it, so I'm a real developer. That's awesome. And Visual Studio Code, you've been using that much, or?
Yeah.
It's so good, isn't it? It's like a, we've gone forward. It's just an amazing thing to have just snuck up out of nowhere, didn't it? So it's really cool. And what about Visual Studio for Mac? Are you looking at that as well? Or?
No, I'm more likely to just run up
Windows. Oh, yeah, cool.
We've about 10 years.
Oh, right, there you go. Yeah, I'm just trying to rip it out, actually. Really in there, isn't it? Who else is an ASP.NET Core so far, or .NET Core even? Yeah. What are you using it? Oh, cool. So Web API or MVC or?
No, it's just standalone.
Okay.
It's a Web API.
Nice. How'd we go? Good. All right. Awesome. We're clicking. We've just got a couple more minutes, so I might just randomly pick on more people in the crowd. What about you guys over here? ASP.NET Core or? No? So this is the non-users. There's plenty more in the current users section over here, so just based on my sampling of two people. All right, well, we'll... Is this being recorded? Okay, then I swear. Guys, I'm just waiting for him to give me the thumbs up before I actually start. Is it on now?
Yeah.
So look at this, we're pro, we've obviously talked this through. Guys, welcome. I'm Jordan and I'm a senior technical evangelist for Microsoft. I'm a software dev by trade. I've actually worked in consulting companies and I've run my own business before for about 6 years before coming into Microsoft to take on the evangelism role. I've built apps on Xbox and phone and all sorts of things in JavaScript and C# mainly. And in my team at Microsoft, in DX especially, we work with software developers and software development teams to help, you know, you guys to really make the most out of Microsoft technologies and also start looking at, you know, modern technologies and how you might integrate them into your systems, and we look at DevOps and all sorts of things. And so ASP.NET Core is obviously one of those technologies that's around at the moment that we're looking at, and especially at the moment with all the interest in moving to the cloud and looking at those modern cloud workloads, and ASP.NET Core has a really big part in all of that coming up. And so what I want to do today is just start off a little bit around the position of ASP.NET Core and just talk through, I guess, what is it and why does it exist? And I think that's the question I probably get asked the most is, you know, how's it different from .NET and which one should I use and all that sort of stuff. So we might investigate that a little bit before going into some of the important things that are perhaps a little bit different in ASP.NET Core from a development perspective. That I think that if you know straight away, you'll get up to speed faster. I think it should be a fun little session. All the code I've got today is going to be available on GitHub as well. There'll be a link on the screen on most of the screens. Before we really get into, I think, ASP.NET Core and figuring out its position, we need to go and have a look at a little bit of the history of .NET itself. And so I actually started software development right at the same time that .NET and ASP.NET were sort of released and became popular. And back then, .NET, for a long time actually, it's this single big framework that we produced. You get the base class library, you get all the frameworks and the compilers and everything like that, all in one big bulk monolithic system that works together. It gets installed alongside Windows. And that's it. You get one version. If you want to have a different version, you need a different machine. It's very heavily tied into Windows. And that's okay. That was fine. And it's not a problem at all because we're using it on Windows. But then as time moved forward, we start looking at, hey, this actually .NET framework thing is pretty cool. So we need to put it on other stuff. So we went along and we grabbed it and another team fired up, a team that sort of sits beside the .NET main team. And they start building a version for Windows. They pull things out and they add things in and they tailor it for the Windows Phone, Windows Mobile platform, as it were, back then. And so as that team spins up and they make their own decisions around what the framework should look like to tailor it and things like that, most of .NET there looks the same, but it really is actually built by a different team. The DLLs don't run on the same machine. It's not actually the same framework. It just looks the same to developers, and that's intentional to make it easier to use and things. But underneath the hood, so much different. But we kept doing that. So here we are. We've got browsers with Silverlight in them. Rest its soul. I was actually a Silverlight MVP, so that ended. And Windows Phone as well, which is still. No, it doesn't even have Silverlight anymore, does it? It's all UWP now, so... Yeah. But the same thing happens. So we put in a browser, we've got to spin up a team for that, knock off some things that don't make sense in browsers, and knock off some things that don't make sense on phones again. Windows Store comes along, and we sort of started doing it again. We're talking about Windows 8 here, not Universal, although there was this other version of Universal on Windows 8 at the end. 8.1. And so we started doing it again. And we're sort of like, let's just take a good long, hard look at this. We've got another platform we're building and we're just getting into it. And this is really serious now. Stores are becoming a thing and we want to make sure that we really do it right. And so we had another version of .NET, the Universal Windows version of it, the older one. And so what we did is we stopped and we thought, let's really go and make sure we do this properly. So for Windows 10 and Universal Windows Apps, the UWP, we added a new platform called .NET Core. And so what we've done is we've abstracted away everything that might be platform specific and make sure that the actual framework and runtimes can work across platform on any device instead of just one that we're currently targeting, and then make a system to be able to add features on top of it that target a particular system. And so that's when .NET Core was born, I guess. And right from the start, the intention was to have this fantastic cross-platform system. So we've got ASP.NET Core now, which I guess is one of the platforms that runs on top of .NET Core. And that's what we're going to look at today, obviously. But I do want to have a look a little bit deeper into sort of how .NET works and what makes it so cool. So, as I mentioned, you have the big monolithic .NET framework, and then you've got a sort of less monolithic, well, still monolithic, but a lot smaller framework for the Compact and Silverlight. .NET Core is, again, it's a more streamlined, I think is the word I'm looking for. It's a streamlined framework. It's got plenty of features and things. It's not really smaller, and it's certainly not going to end up that way. So it's unfair to call it smaller, but it is composable and lean. And then ASP.NET Core, which it's actually got the capability to run on multi-frameworks. So this is a key feature of ASP.NET Core, is it can run on the full .NET framework, or it can run on the core framework. That's a very interesting point because it can target multiple frameworks, which is something we couldn't do before. So now we've got a bit of a family going on. We've got the full.NET framework, fully featured, very well supported, works great on Windows machines. And there's no reason to stop using it if you're happy using it. If there's nothing that you need to change, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and all that sort of stuff, then continue using it. We've got .NET Core. It's great for situations where you want to target cross-platform workloads, Linux or Mac or something like that. It's also really great if you want to run things side by side. So when you ship a .NET Core app, whether it be ASP.NET Core or whether it be for Raspberry Pi or UWP or whatever, then you're shipping the framework with it. So you can actually have one app that's using one version of the framework, and then another app sitting beside it's using a different one. So if you don't have to know what else is on the machine to be able to target and install there. This is so I can't chase birds, by the way, this sound. That's one of the main things around the .NET framework as well, is that it can be run side by side with other things. Now, think about it for a minute. That's really fantastic scenario as well for cloud-based systems. So you might have really densely packed servers with lots and lots of services running on them, and they don't have to have different versions of the framework. I mean, you can have different versions of the framework, and they don't affect each other. So you can run really lightweight, lean services that don't necessarily need to be wrapped up in entire containers. You can run multiple versions of microservices or anything like that within the same space on a server. And then we've got Xamarin as well, and there's plenty of sessions about Xamarin during the conference, obviously. Again, cross-platform, it's mono-based, and it's you use .NET and you can write code for iOS, Android, and OS X, and of course, Windows. So that's the family. Now, the other, I guess, big thing about .NET Core is that it's fully open source. And I'm not just talking about the actual code itself. The bug requests and everything to do with the actual building of the app as well is also open source. So it's actually fully developed in the open. There's nothing hidden. If we're going to work on something, you'll see the jobs go into the system and all that sort of stuff. And we've actually, you might have heard in the keynote, we're actually one of the Microsoft as a company has the most contributors to its open source projects as far as GitHub's concerned. So we're really taking it seriously, and we've got a very active community around it. And there's quite a large percentage of the performance gains that we got from working hard on getting ASP.NET Core running really fast came from the community. So I can't remember the percentages, there's numbers flying around, but it's quite a decent percentage. And you can go along, this is a really nice thing, is you can go along and actually start browsing the code for a nice piece of quiet Sunday afternoon reading. But that aside, if you do get stuck with something, you can actually dig through and see what's going on deep in the framework if you have to. It's not always that it's in some really weird, code segment that's doing really crazy weird things. You can actually really figure out what the framework's doing underneath and try things. So we're going to have a look at some of that today. So there's some tenets on ASP.NET Core that I think are important, and I'm just going to quickly whip through each one of these. So firstly, it's totally modular. It is composable framework. So when you first fire up an ASP.NET Core site, nothing works. It's a bit weird, but you'd think that you should be able to do at least something, but nope. You don't get an error page, you might not even be able to serve files because you've got to actually configure it to do every little thing that you want it to do. The static files don't work when you just create a new site with the base template, because who's to say you actually really do want to ever serve a static file, so why have it sitting in the pipeline? You can use templates that are fully featured and get the lot, right? But if you want to cut it right back, you can. So you can really get these things lean. They're designed for really low memory, high scale environments. Large memory, but you're doing a lot of stuff, so you don't want to use a lot of memory, so minimal footprint. It's designed, one of its core tenets around developer productivity is fast development, so that means fast development cycles. So that means actually F5 to debug is going to be really quick. So we worked really hard on making sure that you don't have to keep restarting the app and making sure that when you want to launch the app, it launches really quickly. So We've also got seamless transition from on-prem to cloud, and that's about supporting environments and containers and all that sort of thing. So that way, when you do want to start moving things that you've built to work on-prem, they should work exactly the same up in the cloud. There shouldn't be decisions and problems to deal with around that. Another one is that we didn't want to lock people into just using whatever editor we decided we were shipping at the time. So we've opened this up, and we understand that developers really do not like to be shepherded into particular choices. So working on a Mac in Visual Studio Code, or whether using Atom or even Sublime and things like that, any of those editors are perfectly fine, because the framework comes with cross-platform build tools and things to help you get started and actually work with .NET and plugins and all that sort of stuff that can work in any of the editors. So there's nothing embedded in Visual Studio, to be specific, that enables .NET to work. It's open and it's integratable and all that sort of stuff. So we've got Visual Studio Code, which is cross-platform, but there are other editors that are also supported. It was designed from the ground up. This was going to be an open source project, so it's not something that we tacked on later. The very first commit was done live in GitHub. And then from then on, everything's been open and inclusive. So the community, as I said, is able to contribute. Of course, the cross-platform tenet, you don't sort of fall backwards into that. So from day one, it's been designed to be cross-platform with all the problems of herein and things that the problems that causes. And once we get it stable and accurate, I think is the other word, then we wanted to make it fast. We wanted to make it the fastest platform around. And so, within reason, of course, what it is we've just had our tech and power benchmarks come back, and we are the fastest mainstream platform, so a web development platform that you would actually use, not some academic thing with C++ running in memory or something like that. It's actually the fastest mainstream web platform for pure tech, for plain text. So we're looking at over a million, I think it's like 1.5 million or something, requests per second on this particular test on specific hardware. So it is super fast. It is built to be quick. And that's part of the composability and a few other tweaks and things like that. So I just want to call out some stuff that I'm not going to cover today. And just to make sure, I think these are things that you need to look at before you're going to get the most out of the platform. So I just want to call them out. Now, of course, I'm not actually going to look at Web API today, a fantastic framework for producing APIs and for handling that RESTful, I guess, style API. And so that's very important to know all about if you're going to go down the ASP.NET Core path. And of course, MVC as well. So ASP.NET Core fully supports MVC and Razor and all that sort of stuff. So make sure that you cross that as well. There's a great new feature in ASP.NET Core, which is helper tags. So we realise that Razor, whilst it's extremely powerful, it can produce some fairly ugly looking HTML files. And so tag helpers help tuck away some of the code so you're producing really nice looking HTML using tags instead of Razor syntax, which is, you know, it looks like C# jammed into HTML. So that's another cool thing to look at, and there's some great examples up there of that. So, of course, Visual Studio Code, we're just going to have a very brief look at it today as part of one of the demos. Cross-platform, free, works with everything, so it's not just for... it's an editor, it's not an IDE. It's a text editor that's advanced enough to be able to understand code and things, but it's more like Atom or Sublime or something like that. But it is fully featured, and it's not just Microsoft Tech either. It supports a lot of different technologies and has a really, really great plugin system as well. And the other thing is DevOps, so I think that's an important angle to investigate if you're going to go down the ASP.NET Core path, and making sure that you're across how you're going to look after it and deploy it and things. So just all the usual things, I guess. I want to take a little bit of a different path for my demos today, just really showing what the framework's about and how you should, I guess, take a bit of a different approach to the ways you might have done development in the past for ASP.NET technology. So this is going to sound weird, but I want to talk about project creation today and different ways to do that. So it might seem like a really base level thing, but I think the way that we do it in .NET Core is different enough to justify giving it some airtime. I want to look at the project system. So it's changed a couple of times. If you've been following along with ASP.NET Core, we've shifted around a bit. So I want to just make sure we address that and see where it's up to today. And if you didn't see project.json and don't miss it, then don't look it up. It was awesome, and you'll feel sad when you look back. So stay away from that. And I want to look at composition and the way that we actually put apps together and including things that we need instead of just ignoring them. So with ASP.NET full version, if you don't want something, you sort of just ignore it and pretend it's not there. Settings are different enough in ASP.NET Core that we're going to investigate them today. So it's a little bit different. Web.configs and things like that have changed around a bit. So, and also the way you consume settings is a little bit different as well. And that's thanks to some architecture changes around the way we do dependency injection and modern things in ASP.NET Core. OWIN, which is basically a way for you to have a web server-based scenario without having to know anything about the actual server. So it's a pipeline of jobs to run whenever a request comes through the system. You don't know anything about what the actual server technologies you're running on, so you could be running on any, like on Apache or Nginx or anything like that. You don't have to know, but you can still do stuff. And you can also inject things into the OWIN pipeline on someone else's pipe, let's just say, you know, they've got some authentication happening and things like that. Depending on the order that you put things, you can actually intercept something before the authentication or after it and all sorts of stuff. So, and it's really neatly designed, so it's nice and easy and doesn't get messy. And Docker as well. So Scott talked about a little bit of Docker in the keynote, but there's some cool Docker stuff that I think we can show if we have time. And, of course, cross-platform. I'll do some demos on stuff other than Windows today. So. Cool. All right, so the first demo of the day is project creation. And what I want to do is just quickly run you guys through. Let's get this up here. So what I want to do today is I just want to quickly run you through, just like from scratch, how we actually get a new project going. I'm sorry if that's really small, it doesn't really matter, we're not going to look at that much. So I'm going to go into PowerShell here. Okay, that probably is a bit small, I should have probably checked this, sorry guys. I'll just quickly make that bigger for you. 36, whoa, that's too big. Alright, that should be better. Okay, so with .NET, when you install .NET Core SDK, you actually get the ability to start creating projects. So if you type .NET new, you're going to get a whole bunch of options around what you can create. And so we can create new console application or class library or unit tests, and we can create empty web apps. There's a whole bunch of templates, and I'm sure more will be added that you can use. This is the same on any platform as well, so it doesn't matter where you are. You can very easily start creating these test projects and putting them together. Excuse me, I've been talking too much this morning. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to create an empty web project. I'm not going to use web API or anything like that, so I'm going to go .NET new. There we go. Sorry, .NET new web. And so what it's going to do very quickly, it's going to create me a new project with just a program and a startup file and a CS project now. So that's back again. I'm sorry if you can't see that. I'll just zoom in a little bit there. Okay, so we get a web root, program to CS, startup to CS, and a web project at CS Proj. So we're back to CS Proj format. If you've been following along with ASP.NET Core, then you would have seen project.json for a while and no project file. We went back to CS Proj because MS Build is so pervasive amongst tooling that it was harder to go and add the project.json style projects to the other tooling than it was just to change ASP.NET Core. Excuse me. So we've gone back, unfortunately. A lot of people really liked project.json. We've had to take it away just so then we can make ASP.NET Core nice and supported. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to copy in a file here that we need a bit later just before we... There we go. Okay. Cool. All right. there. Now, one other thing that we can do is we can actually create solution files too. So I can go .net new SLN, and there it is there. So we've got this solution file, and then I can just go and run that. So I can go demo. Oops, so a demo on the end. Okay, it's going to fire up Visual Studio, and it's been nicely created for us, this project and things. We still have to put it together. I didn't know to automatically add it, but I'll just include that here now. I'm using Visual Studio 2017 here, and just waiting for that to load. Okay, still not loaded. So Visual Studio 2017, if you missed the keynote, there's a little bit of announcement there actually. I'm not sure if it was meant, but it's being released on in early March into RTM. So it's an RC3, I think, at the moment, or maybe 4. And it's free to download now. But I think the community edition will be available for free anyway. So you're able to get Visual Studio and start using it without having to have a license. So I'm just going to go and add that CS project there. Okay, so we've got our little... Oops, I added a solution item. Okay, let's try that again. All right. So let's fire this guy up. Now, once I get into Visual Studio, it becomes very familiar. Like, so ASP.NET Core is it runs very similar to ASP.NET in previous versions. You don't need any special hosts or anything like that. It will actually just fire up, and you'll be able to debug it just like a normal old Visual Studio site. So, just need to jiggle this. There's two different ways you can actually run these guys. So there's an inbuilt web server in ASP.NET Core called Katana. And what it does is it's a little host that you can run your ASP.NET Core sites on other platforms or on Windows. You can host it in other apps and things like that. And so what happened just then is it fired up in that web server instead of in IIS Express. So now I'm running in IIS Express, and I can see that I've got my Hello World running there, which is very pretty. It's very basic. And so that is .NET new. It's created me a new project. I get my files here, and we'll go through what these are soon. And so project creation. .NET new, you can create console apps and class libraries and unit tests using either Visual VS Test or XUnit. Of course, you can create fully featured ASP.NET Core Web, MVC, and Web API based solutions. And you can create solution files themselves. So solution files are a bit of a Visual Studio based concept. So they're more important on Windows platforms with Visual Studio installed. Okay. So the next up, what I want to talk about is composition, the way that ASP.NET Core comes out of the box with pretty much nothing going on in it, and the way that we compose our apps together. And this is where it really starts differing from other platforms. So let's jump back into Visual Studio. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pop in a couple of static files. So I'm going to build an app today where you can send in some JSON, and it's going to pop back out a pretty version of it. Just for something to do. And it's a nice and basic example that I think really suits the concepts that we're going to be looking at today. So what I'm going to do is I've got a couple of CSS files, a JS file and a CSS file that we depend on, and I'm going to paste them into the web root of that system that we just created, so that site, sorry. Now, the first thing you might notice is that those files actually came in without me having to add them. So one of the features that people really liked from the CSproj version of, the project.json version of ASP.NET Core is that the project system, you didn't have to manually add files, it just did it for you. So we've brought that forward, that feature. We've tried to bring forward features that people really liked about the project.json stuff. So the actual web project will just work with whatever you copy in there. That makes tooling and working with these projects a lot simpler. And so we've got those two files in there now. Now, before, when I was getting Hello World, what I was actually seeing was this piece of code run here. So I've actually just told the app to just really, on its most basic level, just respond to the user. So, and in many ways, that's a really good example of ASP.NET Core, its most basic. I'm able to do a response to the user without firing up any other framework. We know that nothing's included because it's a composable framework, and we haven't included anything. So we don't have any MVC, we don't have any the ability to do routing or anything. So if I actually delete that and try and run the app now, we'll just get nothing. And this is no error or anything, because errors are even a concept that needs to be produced by the web framework. So there's no... It'll just do nothing. So that didn't rebuild. Interesting. So if I go into /prism.js, it should be, oh, hang on, it doesn't rebuild. I'll just restart that. Okay, so if I go in there, what I'll get is, I won't even be able to see the prism.json file. So I'll build that up now. There we go, nothing. Okay, so if I go /prism.js, I'll see nothing. And if I actually go across into Postman and bring it up here, just close that. Okay, there we go. Paste into Postman, and I do a plus over here. I'll see it's actually a not found error that's come back, but nothing else. So the server's at least known, hey, I didn't really pick up anything, so let's just do nothing. So what I need to do is I actually need to go and add some packages. Oops, that's annoying. What I need to do is go and add some packages to be able to just even show static files. And the way we do that is we go into NuGet Package Manager. So all the packages, instead of being available as part of the base class library, in .NET Core, all the packages are available as separate NuGets. So if I go into Tools, Package Manager, and add new package to solution, and then go browse, I can actually search for static files, and then I can see there's the ASP.NET Core static files packages. So I'm going to include that guy and install that. And then it's going to go through and install a bunch of stuff that needs. Now you can see it's actually doing a fair bit of package installing there. So even just being up the ability to show static files, there's a lot of other dependencies that are already being brought in. So just think about how much is in a full version of this. There must be quite a lot of things that have to be brought in to allow it to work. And so now when I go into startup here, I can actually say to the app, hey, how about we allow the system to use static files? So now I've told the app to insert something into the OWIN pipeline that allows the serving of static files, and so everything pretty much is OWIN based, and we're going to create our own one of those soon. I might just check that build configuration as to why it didn't build before. No, it's okay. Seems to be okay. It's a bit weird. If that's the worst demo bug I have today, oh, I know it isn't going to be because translation. So now when I run it, I will actually be able to see that file get returned. Okay, I just need to update more packages, which I meant to do before. I'm just getting a package mismatch because I forgot to do a step, so I need to go... And this is what I get for... doing a demo using the CI build of ASP.NET Core, because something I want to show you guys today hasn't actually been released into production just yet. So I'm just going to update these guys. There's a couple of things coming in mid-year in ASP.NET Core 2 that are going to really turn this into a really great microservices producing framework. And I'm going to demo them today. But I just need to run everything on this CI build. And all the instructions to do all this stuff is available up on my blog, so it should be okay. Okay, so we just build that guy up, and now we're sans errors, good-o. And we're going to prism.js, and there you can see that it's actually returning static content. And that's just a big jump chunk of JS there. So even just adding in static files requires steps, and I think it's pretty cool. It might seem like it's a bit much to go through just to get static files in, but I really wanted static files, so I've been putting it in. And I can do that with just about every feature that this system has. So, and I think that's pretty cool. So to keep going on with the theme of actually composing things, what I want to do is I want to make it possible to be able to do some more advanced web requests without bringing in MVC and without bringing in web API or anything like that. So what I'm actually going to do is I'm going to go and app.useRouter. Now what this is quite interesting. Actually, I just need to add something else in first. Oops. Okay, so what I'm going to do here is, this is a new feature that's coming in ASP.NET Core 2, but because we've got CI builds and because it's all being produced in the open, I can actually start using it early. There's no secret veil. There's no release date for it. Oh, there's obviously a release date, but sorry, there's no date that it becomes public. If you know where to look, you can actually start using all the early bits of the coming up version of ASP.NET Core. So when I started the project, you might have seen that I copied in this nuget.config file. And what I've done is I've actually added in there another NuGet package source, which is the ASP.NET Core CI dev build version of NuGet, where we publish all the current packages, which makes this an extremely dangerous demo to do because they could be broken at the moment. But the point being is that I do have access to the very latest stuff that people are actually currently building and currently checking in. And this is one of those features that I want to show. And so what I'm able to do here is I've got this new extension method called useRouter. Now, I want to do some web API style things, but without all the features of web API. So I want to go in and get to the basis of what web API actually does to start firing up its pipeline and what it has to do. And so what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to go builder.mapget. So I want to map a get, and I want to map it to this pattern. So it's important to note that that is actually a route pattern, and I'll get more into that in a minute. And now I can actually go in here, and I'll just make this async. When I'm doing demos, is the only time I ever work with white Visual Studio background, so I'm not quite used to the colours. And so what I can do is, this is actually going to get called if I go to test URL. So I can go in here and I can go response, whoops. All right, async, hi there. All right, runner up. Hopefully we get an error. So you're saying, when you know there's going to be an error, it's sort of like saying, black ball, right pocket, left, before we take the shot. So we've got here the route builder, and it's actually just said unable to find the required services. It's complaining. It's saying you're trying to use something that hasn't been included yet. Bits of it are, but bits of it aren't. And this is a bit of a peek into something that I'm going to talk about next, which is the way you actually provide services and set up dependency injection and things like that for ASP.NET Core. So it's actually just said, wait a minute, I'm looking for stuff, but I don't have them. And it's because we actually haven't told it how to use routing. So I've said I want to create this new route, an MVC style route, but it doesn't know how to do it. And so much like before when we went up and allowed the app to start using static files, I need to go here and go... All right, so services.addRouting. And there's lots of these. What this is doing is it's actually configuring the services, which is part of the dependency injection system for ASP.NET Core. It's configuring it to be able to go and inject what the routes need into the route classes, so then that way you can actually go and start using routes. So you have to call that first. It's not done automatically. You have to tell it you want it, because there might be something else on this other stuff where I don't need to actually add routing, so I might choose not to do that. So now when I run the app, I'll actually be able to see that when I go to /test, and I might do this in Postman so we can just see it running in there. It's not going to hit yet. All right. Postman, /test, hits the breakpoint, super lightweight web server going on just there. It's built from just about nothing, and it'll be using no memory. It's not firing up all this stuff that you don't know about in the pipeline. It's not getting, you don't have to go through and try and figure out other ways to make it more lean, because you can't touch the framework and you can't touch the everything that happens before your code gets hit. Your code gets hit super early. And so there you have it. That's actually composing, and that's putting together a really good base level example of what ASP.NET Core can do. And so we're going to go from here, and we're going to start looking at how do we add features on that you might actually be able to use in real world apps to start building microservices that are really lightweight. Okay, so, and then we get the hi there back. It's probably too small to read, but trust me, it's there. All right, so composition, and I think we get it now. I've talked about it enough. We don't start with anything much, and we add in our references through NuGet. The beauty is we don't have to add in the current release version of those references, so we can actually start building future version. We can start looking at what's coming next without having to. I didn't actually update .NET. I didn't update my tooling. I didn't change the SDK or anything like that. I just updated some NuGet so I can start using new features, and that's a really powerful thing as well. And then before we can start using all those new features, we need to make sure that we're configuring the app in the right way. And so there's two distinct parts here. We've got the app dot and do stuff, and we've got the services dot and do stuff. And each one of those two things does something a little bit different. And so I want to have an investigation into what that's about next. Okay. So we also just investigated the fact that ASP.NET Core can be really lightweight, and that you can really get in there. And I think once you learn the framework and once you become a bit of a guru at it, you're going to be able to make this thing absolutely sing. You're not bound to anything, so you can become a pro at this. You can write your own extensions. You can do stuff. You can really get in there and make it interesting and really customize it. So there's scenarios there that I can't even imagine that I'm pretty sure that you guys could solve. In this case, I'm using the Route Builder extensions to be able to go and really quickly create new routes that the system detects and then runs the code from. I think it's just a really, really nice way to get something going, especially in microservice scenarios or when you're testing things or just learning or whatever. I think it's really cool. And I think we'll see a lot more of that style stuff in ASP.NET Core over the next few years. I think it's got a big future in that area as well as the others. So in ASP.NET Core, settings are a little bit different than they were in previous versions, and that's as much a reflection on future direction around switching over to JSON-style formats and things, as well as the admission that now we've got multiple environments. We want settings to be more machine-readable and accessible. We also want them to not check them in to public repos. So it's really difficult in some types of software dev to actually have your settings sitting somewhere else on your system and not have them checked into source control. And so that's another solution. So that's another problem that's been solved in the new modern versions of this technology. Don't want to go there yet. Okay, so adding settings into ASP.NET Core apps. Now, once again, when you create the fully featured version of these templates, it's got a settings file in it already. But because I didn't know whether or not I really wanted to add one, I need to go and add it in manually, but I can just do that by going to the new template and adding a new app settings there. Took a while. Okay, so now I've just gone in and I've gone file and add app settings, and it's going to go and create me a nice app settings file here. Oh, there we go, I've already got it open. It's just got an example settings in it. So they're actually created using JSON, and you can either type them yourself, you can have the machine do it. There's lots of different ways to modify these settings. So what I'm going to do is just quickly paste in from over here some settings that I've got. All right, so very basic example. You can hierarchically stack these, and you can also access them hierarchically. In this case, I'm just doing a really simple version. I've got a new settings bit called API key settings, and in there's API key that I want to be able to reference somewhere in my app a bit later. Super simple example. Now, the beauty is with these new settings types is that we actually prefer, we don't have to, but we prefer to access them in a strongly typed way. So we can actually use the system supports natively actually using POCO classes to be able to access our settings in a nice and neat way. So I can just go and create a .NET class, a C# class, POCO, that sort of replicates that API key setting. So I can go public string, what was it called? API key? Yeah. And that will replicate this API key. Cool. Now, to go and use settings in this, and you're going to get absolutely sick of hearing me saying it, but settings don't work yet because the template and the project doesn't have any concept of them because we haven't included them. We haven't added the services. So before we can even start bringing in that JSON file and adding settings to our app, we need to go and actually configure it. So what I've actually done is we need to go back into the startup.cs file where everything happens in these apps. And we need to go in to the configure services bit, and we need to start adding the ability to actually bring in settings. So what I've done is I've copied from the full version of the new project, the .NET new web API version, and I've copied the template that it creates, and I'm going to paste that in here. So okay, so what it does is, it does a few things. Firstly, what it does is it creates a new configuration builder, which is a new class in ASP.NET Core. And we can start adding and composing our configuration here. So there's not some hidden magic thing that's going on under the covers around configuration. Or XML transforms and things that you might have worked with in the past. We're actually able to just add the settings.json file. And then there's an interesting piece here where it's detecting the environment file name. So if we add a new JSON file with that different string in it, then we can actually start targeting different environments really easily. There's another thing, and it's in the... it's not showing up. There's a way you can use .NET command line tools to start going adding secrets, application secrets. So you can actually reference settings in your app that don't actually exist in any of these files, and they get stored outside of your application directly path. So you can. This is how you can have settings that don't get checked into source control. Okay, so we've got our new settings capability added. Now we have to go into configure services and actually tell it which services we want to go and run. Which settings we want to actually configure. And so we go services.configure and we're able to go and tell it, hey, we want to use the new app API key settings stuff. And then we tell it which section we want to get, and if I remember correctly, which I don't, I'm going to look. It's called API key settings. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so Now, this is an important first investigation into how the services work. Now, services here are pretty much, the way I like to look at it anyway, is that it's a dependency injection container. And so when we register things on the services object that comes into configure services, we're able to then access those things later on in the app, and we're able to access them through constructors and certain other areas where we can take dependencies that are injected into classes. And we're going to investigate more on what that means soon. But just as a really simple example, now configure services gets called first, even before configure, which is basically configuring the app. And so because it's already been run here, I can actually go high options. I can ask for a dependency. And I want API key settings. And I'm going to call it API key options. And now when I run the app, even at this early stage, the container has been configured and I'm able to start calling on dependencies. And in this case, I'm calling in those settings. So now when I go hover over API key settings, we'll actually see that I've got that, I'll just bring that back up. I've got that sum allowed key, which has come in from that JSON file. So not only is there the new file format, but there's a new way to actually configure and work with these things. That's and that is to do with entirely around dependency injection. And I'll show you a really great example of why that's awesome soon. Okay. All right, so we've got our app settings. We use POCO classes to make them concrete types that we can then access really easily. In the configure services section, we go and actually add them, and then we can start using them. We can inject them. All right, so for the next bit, I want to have an investigation on the OWIN pipe as well as dependency injection, and sort of starting to look at a couple of scenarios where they might be pretty cool. All right, so OWIN. It is really awesomely easy to do. So you can create custom middleware that you inject into the OWIN pipeline. The objects in the OWIN pipeline are called middleware. There's no base classes or anything like that needed. All you do is you just go and actually create a constructor that takes a request delegate called next. And then we basically just have a async task here called next, which takes the HTTP context. And then in there, we call next.invoke. Sorry, that guy there has to be called invoke. Context. Okay, so this thing in the pipe, something is called this invoke, and then I go on to the next thing in the pipe and call its invoke. And so you can see they chain together. The reason why I have to manually call is because I might decide not to. If something happens, I might actually end the request and respond going no, or yeah, I can handle this. You might be doing some sort of special routing if something happens in here, or redirecting the user off to authentication or something like that. So you can either call it or not. Firstly, it's important because where you inject things into this pipeline matters. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to make a service, which is basically a class that we can then start using around our application and inject around the place and start getting some useful information. So I'm going to add a new class and I'm going to call it key service. And I'm going to have a public string current key, which is the key that's passed in. Now, what I want to be able to do is I want to also have on here the key from the options, just to make it nice and easy to get. So in order to get the options, I need to request those iOptions again with the API key settings, and that makes them available in here now. So I didn't have to go and sort of worry about how that all gets set up. I just asked for it. So now I've got the option. So I could be just any dev just starting to add stuff. And as you get more and more services added to your app, you can start requesting them. You can start calling them in at places without worrying about how they're set up or needing to know anything about them. So now what I can actually do is I can go public string allowed key. And then basically I can just return underscore settings dot value.apa key. So I can just redirect it. It's a simple example. I know that, but you can see that I've taken a dependency and then I've spat it out somewhere else. The final step here is I actually need to extract the interface here. So I'm just using a ReSharper extension here to go and pull the interface out to make it easier. But when working with dependency injection, you don't absolutely have to use interfaces, but it sort of takes away a big feature of, or a big benefit to using dependency injection if you can't, because you can't mock things later and you can't change them for different platforms and things. And so in this case, I really do want to use that interface. So I've just used a shortcut to extract that, and I've got this interface public key here. All right, so now, again, back to services. I need to go and actually make that available. The system doesn't automatically know that I've added this new thing. So what I want to do is I want to go services.addScoped, and I want it to be the iKey service, and I want to implement the actual key service. So I could actually have iKey service implemented by something else. I can switch it here. Now, anything that uses iKey service doesn't actually know I did that, so the implementation can change without it actually affecting anything else in your app. And that's one of the awesome things about dependency injection. All right, so now that I've got the iKey service, I can go back to custom middleware and I can take a dependency on it. So I can ask in here for the key service. And there it is there. So now whenever I get into this bit, the iKey service will automatically be injected. Now, I don't know what the key service is because I don't know how it's configured on the services, but it could be anything. But all I care about is long as I get one. I'm just going to copy in some more code here just to save us some time. Okay, so this is our middleware. It's going to go and check to see if an API key has been passed in the header. If not, it's going to return and say, oops, badness, and it's going to not call the next OWIN step. But if it is there, then I'm going to add it to the key service so I can see what API key they use later somewhere else in the app, and then continue on through the pipeline. So I do just want to call out something that I forgot to call out, is that back here I used add scoped, which means that this is going to get a new instance of the key service for every request. There's other types that are available application-wide, and they'll be shared between requests, so you might use that for database objects and things like that, but for the scoped one, this is just for this user. So you can actually set user-specific things, especially good for authentication and stuff like that. So you can sort out authentication in the OWIN pipe and not worry about it elsewhere. Now, before the middleware will actually work, I need to go and say app.useMiddleware. Oops. And I'm going to call the custom. I've got custom middleware there. And so now that's actually inserted that guy into the pipe before the route builder. If I put it after it, it's not going to actually hit. It's still going to show the route because it won't have gone through my middleware bit yet. So that's why order matters. So now when I run her up, it's going to say there's a failure. Hopefully I should hit the breakpoint first. Okay, so hit the breakpoint. I can see the key head has come in and it's null. So it's going to go through here and it's going to give me a status code of 401. I'll just let it continue on. It's going to reject me. And it goes, oops, badness. If I go into Postman and send this test, it'll be badness for the test URL. It'll be badness for the ones that we added earlier in the route and things like that. So that is intercepting things in the actual OWIN pipeline. Now, what I'm going to do next is I'm actually going to go and add a better route. So what I want to do is I'm just going to dump in some code again. Wherever we are. Okay. I'm going to add in the actual proper version of our builder.route here. Now, this time, instead of actually using the map get like I did before, I'm going to go and use map post. So this time I'm getting a post endpoint, so it's going to accept posts instead of gets. And it's on pretty slash, and then this is cool. It's actually got language here. So it's using route templates to go and create parameters that I can use in my routes, much like MVC. And then the third parameter that's coming into this method is request data. And I can actually go and query that for values. So you're still getting a lot of the functionality that's available from MVC in a lightweight way. And then I'm pulling out some other information, and I'm going to go and create a wrapper around the data that's posted and post it back in HTML to create that pretty JSON. But what I want to do here first is I actually want to just quickly insert some code in here. I want to go request.hbcontext.requestservices.getService. So I'm going to manually resolve my iKey service here. So request services is an important point. You've got to watch your scope, because the actual one that's being injected into the parent method outside of the closure scope, which is the configure. If I injected it up here like I did the options, which options is fine, they're not going to change. This is a different scope. That's the scope when the app started. Whereas this scope's going to be every request, so I'm not going to get those scope variables. So you're going to request the services, and the value that you thought would be set would be empty. But if I set a breakpoint in here, run her up. And jump into Postman. That's not Postman, it's got the same colour thing though. And create a header called API key and do it some allowed key and run it. And I'll go to, I'll make sure I get that route right. So I'm going to go pretty slash JSON. It also supports C sharp. See what happened there. Pop. Look at you guys. You guys win a prize. You win a HoloLens. Experience. Thank you for that. I would have been hunting around in the code when it was actually a really simple answer. So now I've actually gone in and for some reason I didn't set that into a variable, so that's no good at all. Cool. All right. Bit of an oversight. Can anyone see what I did? Look at you guys go. It is actually blinding when you're doing a presentation on stage. You cannot see the most basic things. Okay, so we didn't hit it because the route didn't fire, but even if it did, we didn't have the API key in the header, so it wouldn't have worked anyway. Now we're hitting the thing, and I hover over K, and because we set the key in that other service in the middleware, it's showing up here. Now, it's the same value, but it's only because we know that it needs to be the same. But you can actually do things in the middleware and insert it in and then access it later. So this is why that thing earlier needed the services configured, because it needs the injection container and stuff set up before it can actually go and start doing things. So do bits in the middleware, nice and separated, and then come back later and then start using those services and the information gathered. Make sure you create your custom middleware to be really small, concise, single responsibility style, tiny little packages of logic. Don't try and make them do too much. Do that in the next one. And that way they're reusable. Because, of course, you can build up your own NuGet package libraries and things like that and actually start putting them together in all of your apps. You can just create an authentication library once and use it wherever. And so now when I come through, I should be able to see the language come out of the route data there. It's JSON. That's working as well. That's what I passed into the route on the end. Super lightweight. We're getting all the best features and for the fastest possible speeds. And then it's going to have gone in, and I didn't paste any data in there. I'll just grab some data here. Body, cool. Body. Oh, I can't see the preview for some reason. Oh, yeah. Thank you. This is my first time. There we go. Oh, look, you know what? Here's one I prepared earlier. Okay. All right, so there's some pretty JSON, and it's actually a bit of JSON that comes back out of Lewis, and that's some of those intents that I was talking about this morning. So let's go on and use the Prism library to go and pretty up the JSON and things like that. It's a very basic example, which is pretty cool. So that's dependency injection and stuff like that. We saw how we can create a service in one spot and then use it somewhere else and use it everywhere. In fact, you could start adding things and just start requesting services. As you start composing your applications, they don't get more complex. Each little class only knows about the things it needs to know. It doesn't need to know about how to set up a database connection or set up this. Refactoring later is awesome and easy to do. It's about that composability, which the entire framework is about. It's what it does. It's the thing that it's built around. We tried to do it last time, but you needed to bring in packages like, you know, your favorite container or whatever, AutoFac or something, to actually do it properly. And it supports AutoFac. AutoFac will replace this container system, no problems. It works really well. OWIN, it's this great pipe. It'll work on any web server without you needing to know anything about the server. You can, each element in the pipe calls the next thing unless you decide not to because you want to end it. You can do some pretty, they're all async, those next calls in the OWIN pipe, so you can go off and call another external service, maybe to validate a token or to do something else. So you can stop asynchronously, start doing other stuff, and then continue on. And so those things, they're all called middleware. That's the thing you want to search for if you're trying to figure out how they work. And there's a whole heap of them that are defined in the framework that do all the bits and pieces, the bits of the MVC and that web API will be middleware. And there's also obviously really easy to define your own. Here's another one. There's just a quick example there of the JWT bearer, JSON Web Token bearer authentication version of it. By popping that in there and a bit of other configuration in front of it, you can actually start blocking if they don't send in a valid JSON Web Token. Super easy to add. And it's all built in. Oh, didn't need to break out. And so, also dependency injection, ASP.NET Core is built around dependency injection from the ground up. It's a super important concept. If you're not familiar with it, then I really suggest that's one of the first areas that you really go into and get familiar with and go deep on. And if you are, you're going to absolutely love the framework because it's really, really elegantly done. It's beautiful. There's three different types. I showed you add scoped. It's probably more than three, but the three main ones. There's also add singleton, which is available across, it was one instance across your entire app on that server. And there's also add transient, which is basically instance per request. Instance per dependency. So every time a new object's created, it's going to get a new instance. And there's reasons to use each of those, and you'll get to know that over time. Really keep an eye on your scopes. If you inject into the middleware constructor, that is the scope of the app startup again. So you have to make sure if things aren't looking quite right, it's probably because you're actually accidentally injecting somewhere that's in the app startup and not in that per request scope. So keep an eye on that. That sort of got me a little bit when I first started doing this. You can, of course, inject anything. You don't have to just inject your stuff. So if you know about a framework service that's on those services configured, you can actually start asking for it. So you can ask for route builders and all sorts of framework stuff to do stuff. Stuff's a broad term here, a very technical term, but it means basically it's not prescribed to you what you can do. You can put it together yourself. It's pretty cool. Okay. I just want to really quickly do a cross-platform demo for you guys. We saw a little bit today with Docker during the keynote, and I just wanted to just show you quickly how you can run these apps on other platforms. And so here I've got an Ubuntu Linux server running up in Azure. I'm just going to make sure that it's alive. Look at that, beautiful. I'm going to create a new folder here called Demo 3. Now, this is the part. I'm just going to flip up my GitHub here. So the GitHub is at JackEdge, so on GitHub. If you cruise across to GitHub/JackEdge, you'll see all my presentations I've ever done up there since, I don't know, since we started using GitHub, whenever that was. And this one's presentation, ASP.NET Core Ignite 27. It's fairly self-descriptive, but all the code we've looked at and more, some other examples are in there. And if you actually go back through the history, you'll see I had the JSON Web Token version in there before I realized that the new version of the ASP.NET Core framework that I'm using, that didn't work on Linux for some reason. It's because it's version 2 and OpenSSL didn't support it yet. Long story short is, go back through the history and you'll see the example on how JWT works. TMI. So, now over here I can actually go git clone that repo. Cool. There it goes. Now I'm on Linux here. It's exactly the same code. I wrote this on Windows. I could have written it on Linux as well. So I'm going to go into pretty JSON. Okay. Now I want to run, I just got to remember the config name here. So I'm going to go .NET restore first. So this is going to get the NuGet packages, but I've got to tell it what config file to use because for some reason on this current build on Linux, it doesn't know how to automatically detect the config file. But what if, because the NuGet.config file, remember, has the link to that other package source that I'm using for the future stuff, you don't normally have to do that bit. So what I've done is I've just restored packages. You have to do that first or else it will complain. It'll tell you that you need to do it. Then go .NET build. I could do .NET new, .NET new web, .NET new solution, or maybe solution doesn't work, and web API and start editing on Linux. The same thing works on Mac as well. And so then what I do is I go .NET run, and it's actually going to fire at Kestrel. I called it Katana before, but it's Kestrel. Katana is the old Owen pipeline that they used to have. And so what it's done is it's actually fired up on localhost 5000, which is the default Kestrel endpoint. Now, the trouble is with that is obviously that's not internet accessible. Kestrel isn't actually designed to be a web server. It's designed to be, it's designed to host ASP.NET Core sites. You're meant to still use other web servers. So in this case, what I've done is I've gone along to the ASP.NET Core documentation and I've looked at how can I go and use ASP.NET Core with Nginx. And there's a whole page here on how to do that, and it just steps you through step by step. It's basically three steps, a bit of configuration, start up a couple of services. And what Nginx will do then is reverse proxy into Kestrel to start showing your ASP.NET Core site to the world. So you don't have to deploy all this into Nginx or Apache or IIS or whatever. Kestrel can host it for you. It's a nice and familiar working environment, and then you're able to go and reverse proxy it into other servers. So I've just fired that up there. And then we'll go along and have a look at that website there. Oops, badness, because we're not passing in that header. If I have a look in the code back here, I can see that I'm actually starting to get requests. So I go into Postman, and I've got the guy, I've got him sitting here somewhere, posting up there with that header present. And it's actually gone off and got the prettified JSON from the Linux web server. So super easy to get going. It takes just a couple of minutes, and I'm running that on Linux now and exposing that to the world. Same thing with Mac. So if I'm running on a Mac. If I go across here, I can see that I can go git clone. I can't believe I just did the command V the first try then, because Mac on Windows it's Control and on Mac it's Command. It's always very hard to do. Just the little wins, hey? So if I go into pretty JSON API now, .NET restore again, .NET restore, and then again it's going to do that restore process, and I go .NET run, It's going to build it automatically because it's detected that it does that it needs it. And then I'll be able to go to localhost 5000 on this guy and get that that badness again. So that's it running on Mac. And yeah, I think we're coming up towards the end. So what I'll do is I'll just quickly flip back to slides for a second, and then we might do some questions and answers. So that's cross-platform. So runs on Linux, Mac, and Windows. Docker containers and things like that as well, obviously. It can also run on ARM-based devices now. There's early builds of it running on Ubuntu on ARM-based devices like Raspberry Pis and things. The core framework runs on Windows 10 IoT Core, but I couldn't get the SDK going and I couldn't actually have a demo ready for you guys today. It's all very early days there. So Kestrel hosts it and then reverse proxies into the actual web server on the front. We're not trying to be the next Linux web server. We're going to work with what's incumbent and what's really good and extend it and add functionality. There's a URL there that you can go and have a look at that, but you can just search for ASP.NET Core, Nginx or Linux or whatever else. And so I didn't demo today containers because Scott the Goo showed it in the keynote, so there's no point to double up. Pretty much in Visual Studio you can right click and go add Docker support, and then you can debug into the containers and hit breakpoints and all sorts of things. That's super powerful because you can pull your container off a prod server and you know it's going to be exactly the same as what's running up there, start debugging problems. So that's a really awesome feature. So I'll finish up there. If you guys have any questions, you can either ask them now or I'll be around for a little bit. And also encourage you guys to get along to the opening celebration tonight. A lot of the team will be there, letting our hair down a little bit. So please come along and say hello and we'll see you all there. So yeah, if there's any questions, please come up or yell them out now or whatever you want to do. So thanks for that, guys.